Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, February 1st, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. The headline, Civics Field Trip. Just before noon Friday, more than 100 Urbana High School students left school and marched down Broadway Avenue toward the Champaign County Courthouse, part of a national day of protest to demand that federal immigration agents leave Minneapolis after the fatal shootings of Brene Good and Alex Preddy. Some brought bags of ice, which were symbolically crushed. Because it wasn't a school-sanctioned event, the district's standard attendance rules were followed. Students who left without permission from their parent guardian were marked unexcused, spokeswoman Catherine Tellez told the News Gazette. Continuing on the front page from the 6th Judicial Court, the article is titled, A New Challenge, U of I alum set to make impact from other side of bench. This is by Jana Wersima, Urbana. During her time as an undergrad at the University of Illinois, Colleen Rames studied economics because she had an interest in solving problems, especially problems that involve people. It was this same interest that eventually led her to switch to a different field. I just kept getting drawn back to the idea of law, because that's even more like solving problems for people, helping people solve their problems, she said. Helping people is also what Rames hopes to do once she's sworn in as Champaign County's newest associate judge on February 17. She replaces Anna Benjamin, who is going into private practice. Sixth Circuit presiding judge Randy Rosenbaum has said that Ramis' initial assignment will primarily be abuse and neglect matters. Ramis, 43, has been an assistant federal public defender in the Central District of Illinois since 2016. Her previous experience includes being an attorney with Meyer Capel and clerking for judges in the Central District of Illinois, and now retired Illinois Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman, according to her resume on LinkedIn. During her time at Meyer Capel, Rames mostly handled civil litigation cases and saw a little bit of everything, she said, including small claims, landlord-tenant law, mechanics liens, a property boundary dispute case, and a mortgage foreclosure. As an undergraduate at the U of I, she studied economics and French. When I was a junior in college, I spent a year in Paris for study abroad through the school, she said. Upon returning to the States, Rames met her future husband, who was a Fulbright scholar and an exchange student in the English department. He had to go back to Belgium for 2 years before he could live in the United States permanently, so Rames moved there as well and earned a master's in French-English translation while living abroad. The two were married in Belgium, and Rames spent her second year there teaching English. She went back to the U of I for law school after the couple moved back to the U.S. Rames recently served as an adjunct faculty member at the U of I College of Law through the end of 2025. Coaching a moot court team, she described moot court as an experience where students can practice appellate advocacy in fake cases. They do oral arguments in front of a panel of three judges, which is what I do now for a living in my role with the Federal Defender's Office, she said. When asked what led her to apply for the judgeship, Rames replied that she's always wanted to be a judge. Additionally, clerking allowed her to get a taste of the judicial side of law, and she found that she enjoyed it. In my current role, I feel like I can't help my clients as much as I wish I could, she said. And I'm hoping that being in the role of the judge will allow me to have sort of a different kind of impact on people's lives. And I was just ready for a new challenge. Continuing inside the front page, we have top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. As popular, productive, and purposeful as Stacy Robinson's been in his decade on campus, it was no surprise he was a man in demand at Krannert Art Museum's opening night for its spring exhibition. Only problem, he was starstruck himself. "I felt like a fan," he said. "You should be talking to the audience, but I found myself wanting to talk to the other artists because I was learning so much." Carrying on a tradition in which School of Art and Design professors display their work at Krannert Art Museum, Robinson and 10 others this week debuted an exhibition curated by Terry Weissman, Another Place, Story Making, The Entangled Prairie. Robinson's piece, Free Black Towns of Illinois, Utopias in Question, Part 1, involves digital time-lapse drawings and animation with an audio collage and tells of three black-founded towns, New Philadelphia, Lovejoy, and Miller Grove, pre-Civil War. It will remain at Krannert Art Museum through July 2nd. "I'm honored that Terry would chose me to be part of this collective," he said. The 53-year-old New York native is well known both locally and nationally for skills of all kinds. That includes curating, writing, designing, and DJing. Black Star last played a Courage Connection fundraiser. Last month, he received a 40 North ACE Award for his multidisciplinary work. To sum it up, he's a big deal. "No, I'm anything but famous. I still consider myself at the beginning of my practice," he said. "I love the community. I do not love the wintertime. This is the most inspirational art community I've resided in." And in history, area history, in 1976, Alan Hewlett has left his job in Saudi Arabia and may reapply for the vacant Urbana fire chief position he turned down last December. Mayor Hiram Paley said Hewlett recently called him and asked if the job was still open. The job is being re-advertised since Hewlett refused it December 23rd to take the higher-paying job in Arabia. In 2011, approximately 100 people took part in a rally in front of the Champaign County Courthouse, calling for the ouster of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. Some of the participants waved flags. Others carried signs with slogans like, "Egypt, we are with you," or "Victory to the Egyptian people," or "No to dictatorship." International history, today's highlight, on January 31, 2020, the United States declared a public health emergency over the new coronavirus, and President Donald Trump signed an order to temporarily bar entry to foreign nationals other than immediate family of U.S. citizens who traveled in China in the preceding 14 days. On this date, in 1863, during the Civil War, the 1st South Carolina Volunteers, an all-black Union regiment composed of many who escaped from slavery, was mustered into federal service at Beaufort, South Carolina. In 1945, Private Eddie Slovic, 24, became the first U.S. soldier since the Civil War to be executed for desertion as he was shot by an American firing squad in France. In 1958, the United States entered the space age with its first successful launch of a satellite, Explorer 1, from Cape Canaveral. Continuing with local news from the Champaign County courts, Georgia man convicted of attempted murder in shooting of two teens last summer in Urbana. This is by Luke Taylor. A Georgia man has been convicted of attempted murder in the shooting of two teen boys last summer at an Urbana apartment complex. Kewan Jenkins, 27, of Lawrenceville, Georgia, was also convicted of two counts of aggravated battery and the jury determined that prosecutors proved he personally discharged a firearm that caused great bodily harm to another person. Jenkins was accused of firing at a 13-year-old, hitting him in the head, and a 15-year-old, hitting him in the hand, on June 8, 2025. The incident played out in the parking lot of the Oakwood Trace apartment complex, where a group of children had been fighting. The fight seems to have begun at Douglas Park and carried on through the night. Prosecutors presented evidence that multiple people identified a man dressed in all white as the shooter, and that investigators believe that man to be Jenkins. Assistant State's Attorney N. Chi Lin played security footage from the apartment complex in which a man in white clothing could be seen walking toward and away from the area of the shooting in the parking lot. Public defender Elizabeth Pollock said that witnesses, many of whom were related to the victims, were motivated to identify Jenkins as the shooter over a man who had been standing right next to him because that man was also a relative. Lynn said that multiple witnesses who were just neighbors looking out their windows did not have that same motivation to lie about the shooter. The man standing next to him testified to having handed him the gun moments before he fired it. That man took an immunity agreement that said that he couldn't be prosecuted for anything he told the truth about on the stand. He had previously lied to police about witnessing the shooting and about not owning a firearm in the first place. The prosecution also presented audio clipped from numerous calls that Jenkins made while in jail. People held in the Champaign County Jail get 2 free calls per day, then can pay for more. Each call made includes an alert that the audio is being recorded. Jenkins was found to be using other inmates' credentials to make calls from their accounts, racking up hundreds of hours since his arrest. In some of those calls, he can be heard asking a friend to offer someone money to call Crime Stoppers and leave a tip that he was not the shooter. He also tried to get another person to work his magic on a relative of the victim. The 15-year-old victim said he didn't see who shot him. The 13-year-old victim initially described his assailant as a light-skinned man with waves in his hair. Jenkins has darker skin and his hair was in a different style at the time, and still was during his trial. When shown a photo, the 13-year-old identified Jenkins as the shooter and did so again in court. Jenkins will be back in court March 13th for a sentencing hearing. Also, article titled Shelbyville Attorney Tabbed as Circuit Judge. This is in Decatur. A Shelbyville lawyer has been appointed as the newest circuit judge in the 6th Judicial Circuit. Illinois Supreme Court Justice David Overstreet announced the appointment of Jack Kiley on Friday. Kiley will preside in Macon County, where he is replacing retiring Judge Jeffrey Geisler. His appointment takes effect February 27th. Under the appointment rules, Kiley will hold office until December 4th, 2028. If he runs for election in 2028, because of the peculiarity of state law, he must run in Champaign County as a resident judge. Overstreet's announcements noted that Kiley is being appointed as an at-large judge in the 6th County Circuit, Champaign, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, DeWitt, and Douglas counties. Kiley, a partner at Kiley Klein in Shelbyville, has roughly 20 years of experience handling personal injury claims and civil cases. He also has served as an arbitrator and mediator, and currently is Shelbyville's city attorney. Underwood was advised during the search by a 5-member advisory committee. They were identified as retired judges Heidi Ladd, Tom Little, and Dan Flannel, and private lawyers Renee Monfort and John Tees. Underwood previously said there were 7 applicants for the post. He declined to identify those who applied other than Kiley. Kiley is a University of Illinois graduate who went to law school at DePaul in Chicago. And from the Vermilion County Court, Chicago man convicted of murder in 2022 death of Danville two-year-old. Sentencing set for March 23rd. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. A jury Friday found a 32-year-old Chicago man guilty of murder in the 2022 beating death of a two-year-old. A sentencing hearing for Dantrell Johnson has been set for March 23rd before Judge Mark Goodwin. The jury heard closing arguments Friday and deliberated for a little more than 3 hours before finding Johnson guilty of first-degree murder. In opening statements earlier this week, Vermilion County Assistant State's Attorney Tom O'Connor said two-year-old Callie Sago experienced a brief life and horribly violent death. It was a life too early taken and taken at the hands of this man, Dantrell Johnson, O'Connor told the jury Wednesday morning. Johnson initially was charged with aggravated battery and bodily harm to a child after the victim was found unresponsive and a subsequent 911 call was made on August 11th, 2022, from an apartment on Garden Drive in Danville. Callie underwent CPR and other life-saving measures and eventually was airlifted from Danville to a Peoria hospital. She was placed on a ventilator but died September 11th, 2022, when her parents took her off life support due to brain damage, according to a doctor in the case. The aggravated battery charge stated Johnson knowingly caused bodily harm or disability or disfigurement to Callie between August 4th, 2022 and August 11th, 2022. After Callie's death, the charge against Johnson was upgraded to first-degree murder, with prosecutors claiming his actions had caused her death. O'Connor said these murderous actions were committed in secret and were so violent and damaging to Callie. The injuries found on the child's body were consistent with physical abuse, according to doctors. O'Connor said Johnson was watching the toddler and her three siblings when their mother, with whom he was romantically involved, went to work. Johnson called 911 when Callie was unresponsive that night. Police officers arrived at the scene first and also tried CPR, O'Connor said. Callie's body was wet upon officers' arrival due to Johnson trying to revive her by putting her in the shower, O'Connor said. When the two-year-old arrived at Danville's OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, hospital officials noticed signs of physical abuse in bruises and other injuries, O'Connor told the jury. In addition, O'Connor told the jury that relatives also told officials Johnson would punish the toddler, hitting her, such as for sucking her thumb. The Peoria medical team found the toddler had suffered from brain hemorrhaging, blunt force trauma, internal organ damage with liver damage, and rib fractures before succumbing to her injuries, he said. Public defender Mike Myra had told the jury Johnson didn't know what happened to Callie. Callie, who reportedly was fine and acting normal when her mother went to work earlier that day, according to Johnson, had over 50 injuries consistent with inflicted trauma, stated Dr. Channing Petrick, medical director with the Pediatric Resource Center with the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Peoria. These were bruises, scars, scabs, puncture marks, and lacerations. Some of the loop-shaped bruising and injuries could have been caused by beating Callie with an object such as a belt, phone cord, or charging cord, according to Petrick. If Callie had survived, her brain was so injured that she would not have been able to function normally, Petrick said, adding that Callie might have had problems with seizures and would have had to be in a wheelchair. And continuing from the Urbana police, Rantoul teen shot while in vehicle in Urbana. This is by the News Gazette, Urbana. A 14-year-old from Rantoul suffered a gunshot wound while sitting in a vehicle Thursday night on a residential Urbana street. Police are investigating an incident that took place at 8:10 p.m. in the 1100 block of Hill Street, several blocks north of University Avenue. The 14-year-old and a 16-year-old were both inside the vehicle when two male suspects fired multiple shots into it, police said. The 14-year-old was treated at Carl Foundation Hospital for non-life-threatening injuries, while the 16-year-old, also from Rantoul, was uninjured. Police are asking residents who live on Hill Street, Harvey Street, and Fairview Avenue to share any surveillance or doorbell camera footage with them by calling 217-384-2320. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Those who wish to remain anonymous can submit tips to Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or 373tips.com or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. And from Kathy Reiser's mailbag, among the many questions asked of multimedia reporter Kathy Reiser, with those early snowstorms this winter, plus last weekend's, how are road salt supplies holding out? Well, IDOT is in good shape on supplies for snow removal operations, said engineer Kenzel Garnett. We are ahead of our five-year average salt usage due to a busy early winter. February's forecast looks to be warm, so we should be just fine. The amounts have not really changed since we were unable to treat this past weekend. The extreme cold would have rendered road salt ineffective. Starting Monday, Garnett said, we will start to use some supplies this week as the temperatures warm up. Temperature today will limit treatments to in-town intersections and possibly some wind-protected areas. Champaign County Highway Engineer Jeff Blue said the county still has an ample supply of salt in the dome and still some supply that we have committed to but not taken delivery of yet. The county should be in pretty good shape, he said. Vince Gustafson, Urbana's interim public works director, said that city is currently in a solid spot with our road salt and calcium chloride liquid de-icer supplies. Earlier than normal winter activity pushed our salt usage above the norm for that time of year. However, we are still well positioned with materials both on hand and available for contract for delivery. Champaign Public Works spokesman Chris Kester said the same thing and added, while we have had a lot more snow than average, the lower temps and continuous snow have limited our de-icing materials from being used throughout the storm event. As of 11:30 a.m. Monday, he said, city crews had plowed 29,900 miles, enough to more than encircle the earth, though we have only spread materials for 10,377 miles from November through January 22nd. Of note, that's about as much, if not more, miles plowed and also spread over the past five snow seasons, October through March, he said. We've used 3,477 tons of salt, 7,625 gallons of calcium chloride, and utilized 5,450 labor hours as of January 22nd. This past weekend storm will drive those numbers exponentially higher based on the hours of continuous snowfall. I'm guessing we got at least 6 inches. The next question was, with many area school districts having taken e-learning days this week, what are the state requirements for academic activities that need to take place on those days? Do teachers track which students log in? Well, Lindsay Record, press secretary for the Illinois State Board of Education, said, the Illinois School Code section on e-learning spells out the requirements for districts that choose to offer e-learning days in lieu of emergency day school closures. Back in the last century, we called them snow days. Whether to offer e-learning days instead of traditional emergency days is entirely up to each district. Record said, e-learning days can only be used in lieu of a scheduled emergency day and are limited to the minimum number of emergency days in the approved school calendar, 5. Each student participating in an e-learning day must receive at least 5 clock hours of instruction or schoolwork. The state statute says the e-learning program may utilize the internet, telephones, texts, chat rooms, or other similar means of electronic communication for instruction and interaction between teachers and students that meet the needs of all learners. The e-learning program shall address the school district's responsibility to ensure that all teachers and staff who may be involved in the provision of e-learning have access to any and all hardware and software that may be required for the program. If a proposed program does not address this responsibility, the school district must propose an alternate program. The law also says districts must make every effort to ensure that non-electronic materials are made available to students participating in the program who do not have access to the required technology, or to participating teachers or students who are prevented from accessing the required technology. Record said, public school districts are responsible for collecting daily attendance data for every student and reporting the data to ISBE monthly. Districts code attendance by attendance type, including e-learning. The e-learning day code may be used only when a district has an approved e-learning program and is using it to provide instruction. State law limits districts to 5 e-learning days per calendar year, and this is monitored through the public school calendar system. Bonus mailbag vocabulary lesson. Don't make the same mistake I did when I posed the question using the terms e-learning and remote learning interchangeably. Even though students take part in e-learning days from a remote location, such as their home, the term remote education programs has a very different, specific meaning under the school code. In state of Illinois legalese, a remote education program is intended for individual students who have a learning need for it, while e-learning is intended to be offered school-wide or district-wide. Position your organization in one of Champaign County's most recognized institutional facilities, the online listing says. This is, Troutman Realty has the listing for the sale of the Brookings Administration Center. What's the asking price? And the answer is, position your organization in one of Champaign County's most recognizable institutional facilities. The online listing says the asking price is $3.5 million. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, February 1st, 2026. Please stay tuned.